elections will come to order, March 23rd, 2011. First bill on the agenda is Senator Howe. First bill on the agenda is Senate File 779. Senator Chamberlain moves Senate File 779 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. And Senator Howe, I understand you have an amendment.
That is correct. Mr. Chair, I have the 11 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain, would you like to move that also? Chamberlain moves the A11 amendment.
I have it in my hand here.
Page will hand it out. Okay, Senator Howe, could you explain the amendment, please?
A11 amendment, I also need to make a oral change to that. I'll wait for everybody to have it.
Senator Howe, to your oral amendment, can you?
To the oral amendment on line 1.3, after the word public, we would insert or private.
Ms. Stengel, do you have
that?
Go ahead, Senator Howe.
And then at line 1.4, after the word only in the period, strike the remaining, the word the at 1.5, strike that entire line, and 1.6, strike that entire line, and then leave 1.7. So the A1 amendment would read as follows, at line 1.1, Senator Chamberlain moves to amend Senate File 779 as follows, 1.2, page 2, delete lines 8 to line 10, and insert, the city of Red Wing may subsequently convey by public or private sale all or part of the land described in Subdivision 1 to be used for public recreational purposes only. Page 2, comma, line 16, comma, delete shall, and insert may. By striking out of the line, that will be taken care of in the purchase agreement that the city of Red Wing is, any potential purchase agreement. So
that's a long oral amendment, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That wasn't a congratulation.
If Senate Council needs this copy,
that might be helpful. Could
it's a prohibition.
Page, run that up here. It's probably making copies of other oral amendments. Wonder. Is everybody okay with this, or should we get it written?
I'm okay, Mr. Chair. But I have a question. When
so,
I don't know if I'm okay.
Could you read the oral amendment, or actually the?
I know what it says. I mean, I don't know what it's doing, but I know what it.
I know he read it, but I didn't.
I'm okay.
Does everybody understand the amendment? Mm-hmm. Okay. Any discussion? Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, could you just walk me through the desire for the change? I mean, as I'm looking at it, it looks like you're allowing for private sale. And I'm curious about the rationale behind that. Usually a public sale brings you net highest bidder. And then also, I understand including it in a purchase agreement, but yeah, just if you could walk me through your desire for the change.
Senator Howell.
Mr. Chair and Senator Reiner, that is a topic of discussion. Currently, there is a lease, a long-term lease with the of the property that's in question. There were to be two testifiers here today that did not make it because of the weather that advocated for just having the word public and not or private. In the original bill, you'll see it does say public or private, and that was at the request of the City of Red Wing. I would defer to the committee to make the determination on that. However, I would say that I did receive, two people that were on the schedule to testify today would like it to remain public. I do have testifiers here that could testify to the reason why they want it or private. So with that, Mr. Chair, I could defer to Marshall Hallock, who is the financial director for the City of Red Wing.
Mr. Hallock.
Mr. Chair, thanks for the opportunity. As Senator Howell began to mention,
could you state your name for the table?
Marshall Hallock with the City of Red Wing. I apologize. As Senator Howell started to mention, the land in question here has a 30-year lease on it. That lease has significant implications as insofar as a potential sale. Our perspective is the current market, the current potential bidders on this are few and far between, if any. And so we're also under some timelines as far as major refinancing that we have about $1.1 million in outstanding debt on this. May 1st is the deadline. And we didn't want to further complicate the process of moving through this proposed sale. We understand that there are some concerns. I understand that there may be some concerns, but we think that this may be an issue that would be best handled locally and deal with some of the issues at the local level. But with that, if there's any more questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, your name again?
Marshall Hallock.
Mr. Hallock. And maybe you can just give me some context. Where is the land? How did the city get it? Just some of the background. Generally, I came off of city council. I like to let cities run their own business. But, I mean, usually if the state's being asked to give permission, it has to do something with how the city obtained the land.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I'll try to respond to that question.
Yes, Mr.
In the late 70s, we obtained legislation to obtain some what was surplus land. If you're familiar with Red Wing, this land is actually located on the east side of Red Wing behind the correctional facility. This was surplus land that related to the development of that correctional facility. We acquired it for the purposes of developing a golf course on the property. The land is there's other aspects of the land too that involve some state and federal funding. And what we're attempting to do is ensure that there's a little ambiguity, if you will, regarding the term recreation in the current law. And what we want to try to ensure here is that we clarify the ambiguity. In that ambiguity, does that mean that government, the City of Red Wing, has to provide that recreational opportunity, whether that be golf, we have ski trails out there, hiking trails, biking trails, and they slide out there, the kids go slide there. Does the City of Red Wing solely have to provide that, or can we provide that through public means? Can we still, if we sell land, ensure that we have the necessary rights so that the public can continue to use the lands for those recreational purposes that they currently do? And we're optimistic that the government isn't the only party that can provide recreational opportunities, that the private is able to do that as long as we reserve certain rights for the public the opportunity to access those lands and make the accommodations to ensure that that continues to happen.
Senator.
Mr. Howe, Senator Howe, so Senator Reiner, to the amendment, any further?
I have more questions, but let's get it in the shape that the author wants it in.
Thank you. So, Senator,
is this an author's amendment?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
This moves the A110203 amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Amendment's adopted. So, Senator Hull, this was originally bought by the city to build a golf course on? Is that? And so they built it, and now they want to sell it?
Mr. Chair and Senators, I will let Ryan Peterson or Marshall Hellock from the city of Red Wing explain the process. It is a functioning public golf course currently. The city owns the property and leases out the rights to operate the golf course. And given the financial constraints of the city at this time, their wish is to sell and retain some of the land, sell the additional land, and still have it retained in the private hands for public recreation.
So
but I'll let the representatives from the city further explain it.
So, just so I understand, the city got the land from the state, and now there's a court. The court said that you have to do this, right, in order to sell it?
No, actually, I think the determination is the city could convey this property with or without this language. This is just for clarifying purposes.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair.
Name for the tape, please.
I'm Brian Peterson. I'm the planning director for the city of Red Wing.
Mr. Peterson.
And I could provide a little bit more background on the city golf course and the history of it. In 1977, the city acquired surplus state property. That's the property in question here, to build a municipal golf course. In 1985, the city entered into a public-private partnership with a golf course operator developer. And over the years, the city has made investments in development of the golf course, first as a 18-hole course, and then later it was expanded to 27 holes and 36 holes. And over the years, these expansions and development occurred with the golf course developer through this public-private arrangement. And as the developer made investments in the golf course, the city extended the golf course lease for the operations of the golf course. So our current operator of the golf course has made a substantial investment along with the city in terms of a public and private partnership. And so now we have a 30-year lease, and I think the question's well put, why wouldn't you go to a public sale and see who else would be interested in the golf course? But the reason for that is we've got investment already made by the current operator. He's got financing involved through the city, and we really just have one potential buyer for our golf course.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. The question I had was, what is the land zoned for now?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Rumbling, or Peterson.
Thank you. The golf course is zoned agriculture conservation. It's a zone for open space, allows for public recreational uses. It's very limited in terms of any other sort of development use.
Mr. Chair and sir, if this was put up for sale, let's say it was for private sale, would there be any, a public sale, would there be a lot of buyers, do you think, that would be interested, or maybe mainly just one?
Mr. Chair and Senator, we really think that there'd only be one buyer if we put it out for open sale because of this long-term lease and fact that any buyer would be limited with that lease.
Mr. Chair and members, usually I get a little nervous when we offer property for private sale from a government entity because, you know, cozy relationships can occur. And sometimes it's a quick sale. It's happened in my Senate district in namely one town that most of the city council members didn't even know the city owned the lot that they were trying to sell. And then they were going to sell it actually to the mayor. and it was the very last 15 minutes of a 11:45 meeting in the evening. And found out later that it violated a statutory rule or something that a city official couldn't buy anything from a city. They later found that out, and just by the skin of their teeth, they realized that, or the mayor realized that luckily there was a delay in the acceptance of a purchase agreement. Otherwise, he would have, well, he was already reported to the auditor, state auditor, for the potential of just offering the purchase agreement to the city, but the city didn't accept it, so his opponents should have waited a couple days. But nevertheless, in this particular case, if it's kind of geared down to one particular buyer, if you think that's going to happen, I guess then maybe I would agree with the author that it doesn't matter one way or the other if it was mentioned for public sale or private sale. And if that's your feeling, in order to stay consistent with caution, I guess I would suggest we remove the word "or private" out of the language.
Well, Senator Limmer, comfortable Senator with Howe isn't here, and it's pretty easy to lunge on his bill when he's not, but I think we should give him the benefit. So I'm going to lay this over just temporarily till he gets back, if that's all right. And then should we do have to move the agenda around a little bit? Senate File 921.
Now where's Keelash? Did they take him
no,
off?
No, yeah. Anderson.
He's here.
I thought he saw him.
You're the new Anderson?
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry.
So how many committees am I on with you?
Two? Probably two too many, right? 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
7 a.m.
Beautiful that time of morning.
I wouldn't know. I haven't
you will
been
look
up there.
Radiant. Here. I'm on the record.
She said, "Oh, I keep you." That was Linda Scheid he was talking to.
An amendment to which we support.
Coherent babbling of an aging man. Who loves his wife?
Hi, Lori. Members can expect to vote before 9 a.m. So. 5-2 or something.
We could wait till 8:55 to vote.
Second bill today is Senate File 921, Senator Vandeveer. Senator Vandeveer moves that Senate File 921 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Senator Vandeveer, do you have an amendment? Any amendments?
I do, Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment, which I'd like to move.
Okay. Senator Vandeveer moves that the A1 amendment to Senate File 921 be accepted.
The A1 amendment just puts the bill in the shape I'd like it. It just clarifies, changes it, a couple like technical changes in the bill. Okay. Probably not really technical, though they substantial, but shortening the amount of time a lease or a purchase of equipment could be amortized over, and eliminates new from the requirement, or from the waiving of the requirement that there be a single source bid. And Mr. Straczynski can explain the bill and the need for it once adopted.
Any further discussion on the A1 amendment?
Do we have the A1?
Any further discussion? See none. All those in, everybody have it? Everybody has the amendment? Okay. Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? See none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion does prevail. Amendment A1 is adopted. Senator Vandeveer, to your bill, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Straczynski will discuss the need for the bill.
Mr. Straczynski, please state your name for the tape, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association, Minnesota Fire Marshals Association, and Minnesota Fire Departments Association. Chairman, the need for the bill is to help address a problem that comes up from time to time as we're trying to acquire large dollar item pieces of equipment. As you can imagine, a new fire truck can cost is over $1 million. A used fire truck would be less than that. We've also purchased major pieces of equipment like ambulances and things. It's not uncommon for an ambulance to cost anywhere between $200,000 and $400,000. Depending upon the equipment and how it's equipped. Mr. Chairman, the amendment really took out the word new as it relates to single source bid, and that's fine. There's plenty of opportunities and plenty of competition to buy new equipment. However, we're trying to address two fundamental things here. Fire departments, when they have a need for a piece of equipment, it's not uncommon for a fire truck, for example, to be a used piece of equipment that some city is selling, whether it's Minnetonka or Akron, Ohio, that's properly equipped, and we know the price is around $500,000. That particular piece of equipment's used. It would have a long-term useful life for the department who wants to buy it. For example, Fridley, Minnesota, fire department. They would have the opportunity then to go to that piece of that owner of that equipment and then negotiate a price for that used piece of equipment, because it meets their particular needs. It's much more complicated to try and bid a used piece of equipment or because it does include the fire truck or the ambulance and all the apparatus that's on it, whether it's a snorkel truck, a bucket truck, or ladder truck, or whatever. I mean, there's so many variations there. So when they have the opportunity to find the right piece of equipment on a used basis, they want to have the ability to go to that single source and negotiate and buy that piece of equipment. That's Section 2 of the bill, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Section 3 says now that you're acquiring that proper equipment either on a new or used basis, it's a management tool. Section 3 gives them the flexibility to lease that equipment from a third-party source, a leasing company, much as you would with an automobile if you leased one yourself. But they could lease that equipment for up to 15 years with the amendment. And the benefit of that is instead of laying out $1 million or $500,000 today cash out of our budget, you know, on property taxes or whatever, it goes like this. This enables them, if they choose to do so, to flatten that cost out over a period of time over the useful life of the equipment. Even used equipment lasts for well in excess of 15 years. So this just simply provides them with a financing mechanism to level out their cost over a longer period of time if they choose to do that, rather than laying out a large sum of money up front. Mr. Chairman, that's in simplicity. That's really what the bill does. It's a management tool for local governments and fire departments. And it's narrowed down. The definition makes it clear in Section 1 that it's related to fire equipment. It's not related to snowplow trucks or police equipment or whatever, and although command vehicles can cost well over $1 million as well for police departments. That's the substance of the bill.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Straczynski. This is interesting to me. I'm reading that it apparently is public safety equipment is defined as vehicles and specialized equipment. So this isn't necessarily just vehicles, is it? Is it also other kinds of public safety equipment? I mean, it could be jackets, it could be masks, it could be other gear.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shide, it could be other kinds of equipment. Clearly what's envisioned is we have airbags, for example, for rescue equipment that's very expensive. They're over $50,000 a piece. We can lift up railroad cars. We do a lot of water rescues. We have specialized equipment. Our collapse teams around the state have specialized equipment for going into those kinds of rescues. If you think about the hazardous materials handling, which fire departments do have, you probably saw some of them around here on our fire service day on the Hill. That's all specialized equipment, but it's very expensive equipment. We're not using this for the routine, normal fire turnout coats and helmets, those kinds of things. This is designed to be something much more significant than that. And if there is used equipment available to us, we want to take advantage of it, particularly if a city like St. Paul or Minneapolis is selling equipment and has a value, and the city of St. Cloud or Bovee, Minnesota, or Hinckley, Minnesota needs that equipment because they've got a specialized need for it. It just gives them some flexibility.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shide.
Mr. Chairman, I understand we're talking about very expensive stuff here, and I think it's significantly different than a bill that I've carried in the past. I wish Senator Limmer were here. We've had discussion about donated equipment, but I do want to ask about liability. Oh, where is... Well, I'm glad he's here. At least I said I was glad. I was sorry he was missing, so.
We share your sorrow.
Well, if I may, Senator Chamberlain,
Senator
Mr. Chairman.
Shide.
I was talking about donated equipment, and we've had the conversation in the Judiciary Committee in the past about donated equipment, but I would guess that there might be liability issues with used equipment as well, and how do they overcome that? Is it because it's an arm's length transaction or something that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shide, good point. The current laws relating to equipment purchases and things and liability, we're not changing any of those definitions or making any modifications. There is a different bill that deals with donated equipment from one department to another. That has been a source of some contention as it relates to donated equipment and liability there. But the liability here would certainly be follow as it would normal course of commerce, and specifically with the there would be contracts involved for the purchase price, purchase of the equipment. All of those elements are covered in those typical contract agreements, much as I think you could look at it like leasing a car. I mean, all those terms are defined, and yet Minnesota law and liability would still stay in place.
Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sudansky, when a city, for example, buys a major fire truck, do they usually take out like a 20-year bond for it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, under current law, they're allowed to go up to 10 years. This bill would amend that and allow them to go 15 years if they choose to do that. I don't know how many municipalities or cities do that. Many of them just pay lump sum for the piece of equipment. But but they do have the ability to do – this would give them the ability to go to 15 years.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I was looking at the lease part of it, it struck me, and I was thinking maybe they had 20 years, but 10 years it could still happen, but not as likely – that government entity might have a piece of equipment, decide that they need a different piece of equipment, and say, well, now we'd like to lease this to somebody else so we can get our different piece of equipment and still have that lease pay off the bond debt. And I'm wondering if that would happen. I mean, it could happen under this, I imagine, that they would then be able to use the lease payments to pay off their original bond debt and thereby allow them maybe to go out and get another newer piece of equipment.
Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, I'm not sure I know the answer to that particular question scenario. I know the municipalities can issue a certificate of indebtedness. And I suppose they've got the power to go out and issue a bond as well when they – I'm not sure if they're buying fire equipment under that basis. But this, under current law, they have the ability to issue certificates of indebtedness. The municipalities do. But the collateral is the actual vehicle itself. or whatever is being indebted, and that's why it doesn't fall to the bottom line on their overall accounting page and generally accepted accounting principles as indebtedness, because you've got the particular item for which it's secured. But I don't know. I suppose that scenario, I don't know the answer to that. I could probably find out for you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Robles.
Well, when you said that the actual collateral is the vehicle, they wouldn't be able to do that then, because they would have sold the vehicle almost.
Correct.
Well, but they're leasing it out. I don't know. But the other governmental entity would be taking a big risk, too, that making sure that the city that they're leasing it from was always paying the bonds off so nobody came and collected the fire truck.
Chairman, Senator Robles, yeah, I think that's what... Chairman, Senator Robin, I think that would more likely be the case, for sure. You should keep in mind that equipment, particularly this kind of equipment, it's not uncommon to find a 25-year-old piece of fire equipment, a hook and ladder truck that's got 6,000 miles on it. I mean, it's very unique equipment. It's designed for specific purposes, so they do last a long time.
Any further discussion? Is there anybody in the audience would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Senator Vandeveer renews his motion that the Senate file 921 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senate file 921 is recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Thank you,
Senator Vandeveer and Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. We're going to revert back to Senate file 779. Senator Howell. I believe Senator Limmer was were you on deck to Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Howell, before or during the time you left, I didn't realize you had left the table. And so I was trying to amend your bill, and the chairman kind of reminded me that you weren't around, so he thought it was maybe the proper thing to do is wait for you to return.
Thank you.
And I don't usually work like that, but but
might be a good strategy in the future, though.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I just need to have a cooperating chair to pull that off. The amended language that you had placed in your bill allowed a public or private sale for the city of Red Wing to convey this property to a future buyer. And I was telling the committee that I get a little nervous on private sale because on occasion it's been known that some political subdivisions can sometimes make kind of sweetheart deals with maybe a well-known developer or a favorite citizen of some sort, and then after the sale, it flies in everyone's face, and there's a lot of cleanup to do as a PR thing for the city. And as a result, on this new language that you had amended on your author's amendment, I would like to move to strike the words "or private" from the language in your amendment, and that the city would still be able to convey the property. They'd still be able to put it up, but it would only be sold under a public offer, usually an auction of some sort, or they entertain offers in sealed bid you know, there's different ways to do it. It since this property was originally public property to begin with, it belongs to the people of either the state or the city, and that in order to get the best, sometimes the best value from the sale, a public sale is generally the best, but at least it reinforces the perspective that there's no kind of sale that nobody else knows about. And that I would like to move that the words or private be stricken from the new language.
Senator Lemmer moves in the, is it now the A11? 0203 amendment.
On page 2.8.
Oh, so if the amendment's adopted, we're back to 2.8. Mm-hmm. Page 2, line 8, strike, or private. Discussion? Senator Al.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lemmer, I understand you're the chair of the Judicial Committee, and I respect... I respect your viewpoint of the concern and acknowledge it. And personally, I do not take a position one way or another on how this committee should address this issue. I think, you know, and I haven't researched what the history is on the sale of public lands. I think Councilmember Rader would like to speak to this issue, so I'll let her address the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peggy Rader, and I'm a member of the Red Wing City Council, and have accompanied our excellent and well-informed staff here today to testify in support of Senate File 779. If you don't mind, before we go to the amendment you're talking about, Senator Lemmer, I'd like to just offer some general testimony about this with a little background in it. The city of Red Wing is facing, like the state and so many other cities, significant budgetary challenges, and our city council is considering and evaluating any and all opportunities that reduce expenditures without impacting services or opportunities for our residents and neighbors. One such option is to convey the city-owned Mississippi National Golf Course through sale to the private sector. A proposed sale of this nature would result in reducing budgetary pressures in city expenditures without resulting in a decrease in the recreational services and opportunities. With the proposed sale, Mississippi National Golf Course would remain a treasured public golf course and available for all current public recreational uses, plus some possible additional recreational uses. The current public recreational use of the property would be assured through the original legislation this bill amends. Any proposed sale agreement, current deed restrictions, and local zoning regulations. A portion of the property that Mississippi National is built on was declared surplus state property and was acquired by the city in 1977. That is just a portion of the golf course. In analyzing the potential for a sale of the golf course, it came to our attention that some ambiguity may exist in conveying the property, and that's all we're trying to address with this today is the ambiguity. On February 14th, the City Council directed staff to work with the state to address this potential ambiguity. This legislation clarifies that ambiguity by stating that the property can be conveyed by the city for public recreational purposes and puts the local decision regarding any proposed sale on a more solid foundation. The second part of the bill addresses the road access to the golf course. The primary access to the golf course from Highway 61 was constructed and is operated by the City of Red Wing over state-owned property with an easement. This represents another ambiguity to the potential buyer of the golf course because the current easement is revocable, even though the city has a substantial investment in the roadway. And obviously, the maintenance of this access is extremely important to the success of the golf course. The roadway has also become an important element of Red Wing Street Network and makes important connections to other recreational resources in nearby neighborhoods. Senate File 779 would allow this roadway to be conveyed to the city for roadway access purposes. Thank you for this opportunity to testify, and we're happy to answer Senator Limmer's question and any other questions that you may have.
Okay, to the Limmer Amendment, further discussion? Senator Howell.
Mr. Chair, I think Brian Peterson from the City of Red Wing would like to address.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Limmer. The question about a public sale. As I mentioned in my earlier testimony, the reasons why we think we have one buyer is that we've had this long history of a public-private partnership. Our current operator and golf course developer has made, you know, major investments in our golf course over the years. So we've got a, you know, a partner that's already invested in our golf course. So in terms of selling the golf course, we know there's one buyer that's available. The sale of the golf course, because of all these different investments that have been made in the past and the different public uses, and there's just a lot of different issues. It's a complicated sales matter. So, you know, in terms of working towards I guess it's best suited to a negotiated sort of process. The, you know, coming to some conclusion that works for our operator and for the city and protects all this public interest is a involved process, and to kind of negotiate something with our one buyer and then put it out to public sale and then have to go back and forth with that kind of process, you know, really could hamper the sale in the first place. There are a number of protections that we put in place, though, for that matter, you know, concern about are we selling this property way under market. And granted, this is not the best time to be selling a golf course or any property, but we did hire an appraiser. We started with an appraisal. We hired an appraiser that's expertise is in golf courses, so we've established some baseline for the value of the golf course. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you is that in one of our principles for selling the golf course, one of the council principles is that the city would share in any resale of the golf course. So if this current operator resells the property, the city will be sharing in that sale. So we won't see a low buy and then someone make a killing on the city on this public property. There'll be a recouping of that value to the city.
Mr. Howell, couldn't you do a minimum bid or something? I'm confused a little bit as to why having a public sale would do that, would prevent you from getting a certain amount of money.
Mr. Chair, I would defer to Marshall Hallock from the City of Red Wing here to clarify the issue. I haven't been privy to the negotiations of this, and my only interest in this is the state's interest. And I think, to Senator Limmer's point, I think that's what he's speaking of, the state interest, not with this particular deal, but going forward on issues. But I'll let Marshall Hallock speak to this.
Mr. Hallock.
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you again. There's a couple of issues that come to mind. One, again, as I mentioned, this is, in the broader context of trying to address significant budget challenges in Red Wing. And the secondary issue is that we have a large financing coming due on May 1st, which is pushing this matter, making it a priority at this current time. We don't necessarily know that we have a bankable transaction walking into that May 1st deadline. But as far as the sale is concerned, I think Mr. Peterson did a remarkable job of explaining the relationship with the current operator of the golf course. The basis of our negotiations have been based on the appraised value that we recently received. And moving forward, I believe that the negotiations will continue to rely heavily on current market value of that course. We've got certain authorizations from the City Council engaged in these negotiations, and there's been nothing in the negotiation that would suggest that we're that the city's willing, able, or is in or is any way, shape, or form going to deviate from what the current market value is. The proposed purchaser also recognizes that we have a responsibility to the public to ensure the public's best interest is represented through this sale, and is working with us on the sale, and is understanding, is working towards selling a price, if you will, that is represented by the appraised value.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm a little surprised that if the city has been putting funds into this golf course, that you have a potential buyer who's willing to assume these responsibilities all by himself and still hope to make a profit. The thing I'm wondering about is I had heard mentioned of a long-term lease with the potential buyer, and that he has invested quite a bit of money into the facilities already. And I am concerned, Senator Limmer, that if they don't end up being the highest bidder in a public auction, that they would probably have some sort of grievance. One, if the lease isn't completed yet, and also if they have invested a lot of money into the facility, that they might come around and try and at least get some of the improvement costs out of the city after the sale has occurred to someone else. And I'm just wondering if that is something that that would be a concern. Excuse me.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Roebling, I'll defer to somebody here because, like I said, I have not been privy to any of the negotiations on this. I know, I've heard different pieces of what's been being proposed, but I have not been privy, so I would defer to somebody from the city to respond to that question.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Heller?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity again. We have a litany of different concerns, that being one of them, and there's other potential concerns because this has been a cooperative effort that developed the course, and the owner does have we are the owner of the course, but does have residual value in some of the assets that they've put in place too, and it is a concern. So,
thank you, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can the city disclose any terms of the current negotiations in public?
Mr. Halleck.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to talk about limited terms, and based on the questions, I'll try to respond as best I can without disclosing
the other question
confidential
is
data.
Senator Limmer.
Has this potential sale been covered in any newspaper reports or news activities?
Mr. Halleck.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I appreciate that question. This proposed sale has been being discussed for probably the last 2 years. As everybody's aware, financial circumstances have changed significantly over the last couple of years. The city council 2 years ago discussed this during various budget meetings, but was reluctant to pursue this. We want to ensure that this remains a golf course and available for the public use as it always has. If the sale was transacted, we don't want the public to see one change. We want them to be able to go out there and enjoy it as they always have, without recognizing that there's been a change in ownership of the land. So 2 years ago, it got brought up, but the council was reluctant to engage in the process of looking at whether the sale is viable or not. Well, the last budget cycle was much more challenging, believe it at that. And there are a number of dates, I don't know if I brought them with me, but this selling the golf course was mentioned at least on four separate occasions to discuss during the budget process. The matter was discussed and vetted fully by the mayor, their former mayor, Senator Howe, and the city council on December 27th. The matter was reported front page of the Red Wing Republican Eagle on just after the December 27th date, and it was mentioned in our public documents, in our public processes, in our public meetings, and may have been mentioned in the Republican Eagle, our paper, based on the discussions during the budget. So it's been discussed for several years. And
And Mr. Chair,
further discussion. Senator Limmer.
The name of the buyer was disclosed in these news articles.
Mr. Halleck.
Mr. Chair, I can't say definitively whether the name of the buyer was mentioned in the paper. I know I've got a call from a reporter the other day in Oakdale, and I know they're writing a story about, because the same person we're working with now owns courses there also, and that was in their paper, the Oakdale paper. I don't remember if it was specifically mentioned in the Red Wing Republican Eagle, which is our local paper.
And Mr. Chair, has there been any other interest in this land since the printing of those articles and public discussion?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, there's been no interest in by any other potential buyers in the land since the meeting. And I've spoken personally with other people that I know have some concerns with what becomes of the land if a sale is transacted. And I've encouraged them to put together an investor group to come to us with a proposal that would be feasible and meet our larger goal of reducing expenditures to address budget and economic realities that we're currently confronted with. Based on the response, there was, I think it's fair to say that there was a reluctance to do that.
And Mr. Chair, one other last question. Is this the whole golf course that you're selling, or just a little corner of it? What's the dollar amount you're seeking?
Mr. Halleck.
Mr. Chair, the way the golf course is currently configured, I've got a small map. I apologize.
A bigger one.
But it's the golf course per se, but there's some lands that are associated with the golf course that aren't used for golf course purposes. One of them, and we plan on replatting it to preserve, we have, as we mentioned earlier, a road that runs past the golf course that's used as a transportation corridor, and we are going to carve out a part of what's currently considered the golf course to retain that, because we need the rights, obviously, for the road. And there's some hillside that we obtained through different financings that we also want to retain, because it's not part of the golf course per se. And regarding your second question as to the sales price, the sales price is based on the appraised value that we receive from a person that specializes, or a company that specializes in appraising golf courses.
Further discussion to the Limmer amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
As a result of questioning the people from Red Wing, I understand that this is a unique property. It's unique to the present owner of the property. The present, or at least the owner of the, or the renter of the golf course, and that the property around it is rather unique, and probably so unique that only one buyer might only be interested in it. It's been in the newspapers. It's been talked about in public discussion. Even though Senator Roebling, for the purposes of sale, they probably would never get to an underprice, because if it went to an auction, they would just establish a minimum bid, and then that could have been established. This is probably a rather unique instance, and as a result, I really get nervous making or creating the option for private sale, but because of it being so unique, I don't think any public purpose would be well served if we continue with the amendment, so I withdraw the amendment.
Senator Limmer withdraws his amendment.
Mr. Chairman, can I just add one point, which also may make Senator Limmer feel a little better?
Ms. Rager.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, last August, the city conducted a general survey of questions of concern to our constituents, and I don't think we could really say that it was scientific, but it was to get a feel for the community. 92% of the respondents said they were in favor of selling the golf course. So it has been vetted really very thoroughly.
Okay. Further discussion? Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I chatted with the folks while we were in Senator Howe's interim. And I just want to get one question on the record, and that is there are no improvements on the land that have been paid for with state or federal LCCMR or federal equivalents, because those things often come with strings. And
Mr. Haddock?
Mr. Chair,
there have
not been, and we've thoroughly reviewed and researched all the financing that went into the course, and there's no federal or state funds that went in that would preclude a sale or come with a lot of strings that may inhibit or prohibit. So.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Senator Chamberlain moves his motion that Senate File 779 be amended, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
So much.
Okay. Senator Chamberlain. Oh. We have a new members. The esteemed Senator Scheid. Senator Limmer, you're talking when I'm talking.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I hope that's not a measurement of the esteem with which I'm held.
I hope so, too. Would you care to comment, Senator Limmer?
Nope.
Anyway, welcome to the committee, Senator
Scheid.
Thank
you. We're
very happy to have you.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. We have Senate File 919. It has to do with local elections. Before we get going on it, there are a couple of amendments we'd like to attach to it. First is, I believe it's the A1. Are they both A1?
Senator Chamberlain moves the A1 amendment. Do you care to briefly describe your amendment?
Good afternoon, members and Mr. Chair. My name is Ann Higgins. I work at the League of Minnesota Cities.
Ms. Higgins.
And we brought this bill to Senator Chamberlain from local election officials, county and city election officials, who meet together and separately to look at things that we have learned from the changes that we have made in the past several years. We made an enormous amount of changes in 2010 that were that we have been implementing and have some suggestions for improving that situation. Just trying to get the right amendment here to talk from. I'm going to speak about the A1 amendment that is the time on it is 11:41. We had another amendment that we may have to go back to at some point. I'm not sure what the situation is as I'm sitting here.
Do members have the right amendment?
11:41.
At 11:41 a.m.?
Great. Thank you. Continue.
Okay, this one amends the very first section of the bill, Section 1, and then I'll go on and go through the rest of the bill. Section 1, we are suggesting that we just want to clarify what Section 1 is intended to do, which is to end for certain the period of time during which voters have an opportunity to cast absentee ballots in person, either at the county or at the city hall or at the city offices, and to end it on the Saturday before the election at 3 p.m. And the reason for that amendment, just so I could speak to it for a minute, and we may get some other comments further on from the city and county officials who are here as well, is to give us a time certain when we can move from the point of having ballots that we are still processing before we can accept and reject to the process of getting those ballots accepted and rejected and enter the information in the rosters for election day. There is that we have found, and particularly when we have even year elections with both local, state, and federal offices on them, that we have a tremendous amount of interest in absentee voting. And now that many cities, not all, but many of our larger cities are actually acting as absentee ballot processing locations and have absentee ballot boards that are appointed and that we must supervise carefully, that we have an enormous amount of work that goes on in addition to getting ready for Election Day. So this simply makes it more clear than our original language did, that we are indeed suggesting that we will not be open on Sunday or Monday for in-person absentee voting. Absentee votes, absentee ballots that have already been obtained prior to, you know, through the process and applying for them and people have them in hand, are still being received through the mail during those days. So it's not that we've stopped everything. We're just asking to give us the resources we need back with, excuse me, with completing that work in time so we can make sure that all the rosters are marked so we know on election day that the folks who have either voted in person or through the mail with absentee ballots have in fact voted, and our election judges at the polls will know when somebody approaches them that they've already voted. And so we can handle that situation in an accurate and completely secure way. So that's the intent of this particular amendment, I guess, Senator. Yeah. Chairman wants to move that amendment.
Okay. Thank you. To the A1 amendment, Senator Roebling.
I'm just wondering, as recently as this fall, though, people were able to vote absentee in person on Monday, were they not?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Roebling, yes, that's correct.
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, and now you're saying that it doesn't allow the clerks enough time, the election officials enough time to get everybody checked off and get the books out to the precincts and make sure that that's all done in time for Tuesday's election.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Roebling, yes, that's correct. We have just experienced a cycle of elections where we have tried to do the various processes that are involved and to secure the ballots during that time period before the election as we process and accept and reject them and then get ready to actually put them through the vote tabulation equipment so that we'll know what the vote totals are. All of those duties require additional election judges to be on hand all weekend, the weekend before the election. And the more time we spend with more people than we know, we don't know what we're going to see. We have seen very large numbers of people come in over the weekend. And what we have reached consensus about locally with our organizations that are city clerks who belong to organizations that represent them across the state, their concern is that the chances of error, the chances of having a problem on election day are evident enough, and the concern of just having enough people to do the work and to supervise the work over that period of time runs counter to how we think an effective election process should be run. And we would like to have at least that point made clear that we're going to stop the in-person absentee voting. It doesn't mean absentee voting ends. If people have applied for and received the ballots through the mail, they can still bring them to the city for the next several days. It's just that people who haven't done any of that work have not recognize the opportunity or whatever the reasons are, cannot come to City Hall after Saturday and try to continue to avail themselves of the absentee voting process unless they have applied for a ballot and received one.
Okay. We're going to adopt the author's amendment, I think, first. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment's adopted.
Chair.
Do you have additional questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just thinking of people who know all of a sudden they can't get to the polls on Tuesday, but then they can't vote on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday. I'm just a little concerned about that. I'm trying to figure out, you know, I guess I've supported early voting to a certain degree, and maybe we have to talk about that at some point.
Mr.
Chair.
Ms. Higgins, or Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, we have two more points. We have another amendment.
Another
author's amendment that's being printed up, and then we have one here that we want to handle in the bill itself. We're just going to strike something in the bill itself.
Okay.
Senator
Chamberlain, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, so in the bill itself, should be on page 4, section. It's under section 5, and it's clause 2. It talks about petition being filed prior to an election. Everybody sees that. We want to strike that whole section, all that new language. Concern here is that if we left that section in, we'd have to go to judiciary, which is fine. Nothing wrong with judiciary, but time constraints. They want to get the bill out so the cities and counties can start dealing with these issues. So I would make a motion to strike that section 2, line 4.17 through I think it would be 4.23.
Senator Chamberlain moves to strike lines 417 to 423. And on 412, number 1.
Yeah, 424.
I think we may have to strike 424 as well.
Okay. Senator Chamberlain moves to strike on line 412, number 1. And 417 to 424. Staff has a question for you.
Me too.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, do you want all of this gone or just the new language?
We need to have all of it gone that pertains to taking it. Anything that deals with going before the judge to expedite the petitions.
So
or section for that paragraph two.
So we would just be deleting the new language and leaving, okay.
Yep.
Okay. So could you read the amendment for us?
On line 4.12, delete the number 1 and then remove lines or delete lines 17 through 24.
Everyone have the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, then do we even need the section? It looks to me like the re-lettering and numbering has to do with the fact that you have section parents 2 in on line 417. I think we should just take the section out.
Agreed. Senator Scheid, Mr. Chair, I agree. We take out all of section 5. I'm sorry. I apologize. Elections are never easy.
Senator Chamberlain moves to remove section 5 from the bill. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Nay. Fails. The amendment's adopted. Did we talk about Monday? Explain that Monday thing again, real quick.
For Amendment A1, the first.
Yes, please. Let's go back to that. Why does Monday have to come out?
I wonder if it would be helpful to hear from one of the election administrators that I have here, sure, that can reflect on what happens with this process now and why we've asked for the change.
State your name for the tape, please.
Hi, my name is David Maeda. I'm the Minnetonka City Clerk. I'm also here representing the League of Minnesota Cities and Minnesota Clerks and Finance Officers Association's Elections Task Force. What we found with the changes to the absentee voting laws that were implemented in 2010 was that it was a much more manual process to process all the absentee ballots at City Hall. A lot of the process in the past, as you know, went out, the ballots went out to the polling place, but all that was consolidated at City Hall. So the Saturday and Monday before a state election tend to get very busy for in-person absentee voting. In 2008, I think our city, and we're a moderate-sized city, obviously, saw over 400 people come in on the Monday before the election. It was busier. We had longer lines at City Hall that day than at any of our polling places the following day. And I think a lot of the reason was people knew that it was going to be a busy election, so if there was any chance they were going to miss voting on Tuesday, they came into City Hall on Monday and voted. If we face a similar situation in 2012, where we have that number of people coming in to vote in person on Saturday and Monday, and given the changes that we implemented in 2010, there's no way we're going to be able to do the manual processing of the rosters, marking the rosters, accepting and rejecting the ballots from our ballot board, and then marking the rosters. Last year, we literally had teams of election judges working on this until 9, 10 o'clock on Monday night. And by the end, everyone was so spent that it was prone for error, and I was very concerned about that. By cutting it off sooner, by not allowing people to vote at City Hall on Monday, it would really allow us to catch up and do the work accurately, is the purpose.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I think the fact that you had 400 people shows that there was a need for it to be open. I mean, that's a significant number of people, and I understand the technical issue. I have concern about reducing, you know, that number of days, but can you tell me what happened to Sunday? It seems to me that I thought like Hennepin County was open on Sunday before the election. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just remembering something that never happened. Apparently, that's the case. So it's just the Saturday.
Correct.
So you, or Monday, or Monday.
I should clarify, Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, we actually did work Sunday. I mean, we processed absentees from Saturday on Sunday, but City Hall was not open for Minnetonka voters to come and vote on Sunday, and there was nowhere in Hennepin County that you could do that on Sunday.
Further discussion? Any other questions? Senator
Mr. Chair.
Chamberlain?
We do have one final author's amendment, then we'll be done with the amendments.
Okay.
They just printed it out. It's A2. And while they're doing that, perhaps Mrs. Higgins can start explaining that one for you.
A2 amendment, I'll quickly just go over it just to get you some idea. This is to bring this bill into agreement with the bill that has moved forward on the House side. There is a companion to this bill, but there were some minor changes that the Secretary of State's office suggested to us and that were added to the bill on the House side. They are simply to make some changes in the processing of mail and absentee ballots to say that they can be, and actually by this language, would need to be counted by one ballot board, that we would not have to have two separate ballot boards. I think, obviously, from an efficiency standpoint and from an experience standpoint, experienced election judges who have already been processing absentee ballots, to be able to have them continue their work and take care of mail balloting as well makes good sense and good use of resources, and not having to go through another process with a separate group of people. Joe, I don't know. No, the Secretary of State's office is here, and Ms. Haxman may want to speak to it. But that's that. I'll go on through the other item. There is also a provision in Section 9 on page 2 of the bill to deal with an issue that the Secretary of State's office also brought to our attention. And perhaps Beth Frazier can speak to it better than I can. But this is basically to take care of the process of certifying election equipment, which is required before we can purchase new types of equipment that may need to be purchased in not too distant a time, because many of the equipment needs are becoming evident as our equipment at the polling places is now moving to its second decade. We'll probably need to begin planning for that replacement.
Mr. Chair and members.
Ms. Frazier.
I'm Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. And the reason for this language is that the Election Assistance Commission is currently the federal agency tasked with setting up standards for election, for the testing of election equipment. There are several bills in Congress that would eliminate the Election Assistance Commission, and we want to be sure that if the commission were eliminated, that we're not stuck with that we're not in a position where we can't certify equipment because there's no longer an agency, or the agency named in statute no longer does that task. So in case it is eliminated, we're just adding "or other designated agency." If the agency is eliminated, we fully expect that Congress will delegate their tasks to other agencies.
Senator Wimmer.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Frazier, do we have a name of the other designated agency?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, there's some discussion of it going to an agency called NIST, which
is federal.
They are a federal agency, but there's some concern about it going to them, so I don't think it's been fully determined to which agency it might be given.
And Mr. Chair, the language would give authority for the Election Assistance Commission or other designated agency at the time of submission to process this, but it doesn't say in the event the Election Assistance Commission would no longer exist. So we're actually allowing them one commission or this other designated agency to be the present agency to deal with this matter. So it's not as a consequence of the Election Assistance Commission being defrocked in a way, but so we're actually creating two agencies or a commission to do this now.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, no other agency would be designated unless the Election Assistance Commission is dissolved.
Are there any other, Ms. Chair, is there any other agencies that could be named other than this NIST thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the Federal Election Commission is another agency that has, prior to the creation of the Election Assistance Commission, had some oversight over election administration. I know that some of the Election Assistance Commission duties would be given to the FEC, and I don't know if this might be as well, if the concerns about NIST are taken more seriously.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if NIST is anything to be concerned with or not, but why wouldn't we just make this change at the time the Election Assistance Commission would actually be decommissioned, and then we make a choice? Would that be troublesome?
Ms. Frazier.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, you know, as a part-time legislature, you're not here at all times when we might need you. Congress, on the other hand, does work year-round. And so, I mean, they could pass a bill eliminating the Election Assistance Commission at any time, and which would then potentially put us in a position where we would not be able to certify new election equipment.
If you're implying we should be here longer, I'm getting scared. Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd feel more comfortable if we designated the agency rather than just some other designated agency. And who does the designating in this case if the Election Assistance Commission would be dismissed in its authority?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I expect that Congress would designate the agency.
Okay.
I would...
Mr. Chair, I would like to divide the amendment.
Senator Limmer.
Or divide the amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to divide the... Which amendment?
This would be the A1 amendment that we're talking about, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
This is the A2, Mr. Chair.
The A what?
A2, Mr. Chair.
A2.
H2. Okay, Senator Limmer moves to divide the A2 amendment.
Oh. And, Mr. Chair, it would be divided in between lines 2.17, or I guess
2.16
and 1.7. And down to 2.35, that would be carved out as a separate entity for consideration.
Okay, to the Limmer oral amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, what portion of the bill are we voting on then?
We'll vote, I suppose we'll vote on starting with 2.17.
All right.
And Ms. Stangle will read that for us. Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, just a parliamentary question. Do we need to vote on the motion to divide?
Well, I don't know. I think if the amendment's divisible, we just vote.
Thank you.
Part of it. Ms. Stangle.
The part that we will be voting on will be lines 2.17 through lines 2.35.
We can vote on either one first, though. If everyone's okay with this one. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
No.
Mr. Chair?
Wait.
I don't know what the yes vote meant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was Senator Limmer
I share
voted?
Your concern. Senator Limmer. We're going to do it. Is there a do-over motion?
Yes.
Reconsider.
Reconsider. Senator Limmer, could you explain
Limmer,
your motion?
Yes. I would like to remove lines 2.17 to 2.35 from the A2 amendment. And if you're in agreement with that, you'd want to vote yes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
We have Mr. Mansky here. He has a suggestion that might resolve this matter.
Mr. Ojansky, is it?
Mansky.
Mansky.
State your name correctly for the tape, not the way I did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Mansky. Should I spell that for the tape?
Sure.
That's Mansky for those who need that.
Mr. Mansky.
If I can just amplify something that Ms. Fraser said, and actually there is a nexus between this and another subject that I think is worth talking about of interest to Senator Sieb and Senator Roebling, and that's this business about counting the ballots that are coming in person from the absentee voters. There is a very strong likelihood, in fact, a virtual certainty, that all or most of us will have new voting equipment in preparation for use for the 2014 state elections. The Secretary of State will be working on this, on the certification of these devices, likely later this year and next year, and possibly after you have adjourned sine die for this current session of the legislature. And there is some need for them to be able to certify equipment so that we can buy it in time to put it into use. And Senator Limmer, I don't know whether that helps you out at all, but perhaps the thing to do here is perhaps to leave that provision in the amendment and just have some language that says that whatever the appropriate federal authority that is responsible for testing and certifying compliance of voting equipment with the federal guidelines. I think that's really what we're looking for, so that the state can do their part. Without them doing their certification, we're unable to legally buy any of the new equipment, and which we would like to be able to do.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, that's good advice. I don't know if I could withdraw my amendment in order to replace it with the amendment language that Mr. Mansky suggested. I don't know if the council got all of that. I know I did not. Could you repeat your suggested language?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, and perhaps for council, if you could insert in the appropriate at the appropriate place a reference to whether it's the Election Assistance Commission or the appropriate federal agency responsible. Tell me if I'm going too fast here. Responsible for testing and certification of compliance with the federal voting systems guidelines.
Ms. Gangle, Stangle.
I think I lost you towards the end there, Mr. Mansky. Compliance with the federal
voting systems guidelines. And I think the words we want to have in there are certification of compliance.
And Ms. Stangle, if you could read that slowly. Yeah.
Sure. On lines 2.21, we would delete "or other designated agency" and insert... Sorry, didn't need to delete all that. We would delete "other designated agency" and insert "appropriate federal agency responsible for testing and certification of compliance with the federal voting system guidelines." Did I get all that right, Mr. Mansky?
Further discussion?
I would move that as the appropriate amendment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, could you say that one more time, please?
Ms. Stangle, did you have a question?
And I did have one other question, Mr. Mansky. There's two other places where "or other designated agency" is listed. It's on line 23 and 26. Do you have any suggestions about how we'd want to handle that instead of plugging in this long phrase in both places?
Mr. Mansky.
Could we perhaps just say "or other appropriate federal agency"? Would that...
Mr. Chairman and Council, I think that might be one way to do that.
Or previously referenced?
A previously referenced, yes.
So should we read it one more time?
On line 21, page 2, delete "other designated agency" and insert "appropriate federal agency responsible for testing and certification of compliance with the federal voting system guidelines." And on page 2, line 23, delete "designated" and insert "previously referenced." And on line 26, delete "designated" and insert "previously referenced." Mm-hmm.
Okay, discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, with the passes of that amendment, does this bring it back to Judiciary Committee?
I'm kidding.
Okay. I have an amendment. Oh, we have the second part of the divided amendment. Senator Limmer, to your... wait a minute.
Mr. Chair, so that was the amendment to our author's amendment.
So we still have to pass that amendment. Yeah. To the A2...
A2.
Amendment. But we're still on the first divided part because we just amended it. So...
Yes.
Yeah, so What are we voting on now?
We're voting on the remainder of the A2 amendment.
We just amended the first part of the divided amendment.
Right, so we still have to vote on whether we pass the first part of that division.
We would have to pass the whole amendment?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Just the part. Well, we have to pass this part first,
right?
Right.
We have to do two votes. Two votes.
So on part one.
Mr. Chair, I may.
Senator Chamberlain.
We amended the A2 and we had no further reason to divide the amendment, so aren't we just. We voted for the amendment to the amendment, so wouldn't we just vote on the A2 author's amendment now?
Right.
Correct?
Do you, Senator Limmer, do you want to withdraw your division amendment?
Sure, I had withdrawn my motion before.
Oh, and that was so we could do this, so we don't have a divided amendment?
That's right.
Okay, so we had, and we adopted your oral amendment.
A2 amendment.
So are we back to the amendment?
As a whole.
Senator Scheid, help us here.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be the A2 amendment as amended.
Right. Okay. Senator Limmer moves the A2 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendments adopted. And I would like to move to delete section 1 from the bill, which takes the Saturday. Which one do I want? And I need to delete section 1 from the amendment, which puts the Monday back in there. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Stengel can explain. Or did Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to ask Ms. Higgins if you had numbers. I understand the city of Minnetonka had 400 people. I assume Ramsey County had a significant number as well. Do you have any kind of idea of the numbers statewide? Maybe Mr. Mansky and then.
Mr. Mansky.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid. As Mr. Maida pointed out, for all of us, Monday of 08, and the reality is the sole issue here is the state general election. The other elections are not a big deal. Our sole issue is the state general election. And more to the point, and here's the nexus with, and I'm not here to promote Senator Stevens' bill, at least not today, but at some point I do want to do that because I know that is of interest to many people here. But the issue is the presidential election coming up because it is between where we are now and this new equipment. Once this new equipment arrives and has been certified by the Secretary of State, it will have the capability of implementing the provisions of Senator Stevens' bill so that when you walk into our office and vote in person and whatever we choose to call it at that point, whether it's early voting or whatever the deal is, you'll be putting your ballot directly into the ballot counter. It will be counted. We won't have this processing and counting activity. My fear is, and I want to, my goal here is to instill my fear into you. You all know the environment in which we're working. You know what the results of the last two state general elections were. We think it is plausible that a similar result is awaiting us in 2012. And what we don't want is a situation where we wake up on the morning of Wednesday, November 7th, and the margin for president or U.S. senator is 200, 300, 500 votes, and because we were unable to process all the activity from Monday, we still have 1,000 unopened, uncounted ballots in our possession, which under the bill that we worked with Senator Sieben on last year, we could do. We could choose to wait until Wednesday and process these ballots. I am telling you, we do not want to be in a position of being in possession of enough ballots to alter the outcome of the election. We want to be in a position where at 8 o'clock on election night, every ballot that you have sent in, whether you came in person or sent us something through the mail, has been processed by our election judges and put into our ballot counter and counted. And so the sole issue here for this amendment is to get us past the 2012 presidential election. By the time we get to the subsequent state general election, I am presuming that the Secretary of State will have certified the equipment we need to implement Senator Stevens' proposal, which is that when you come into our office to vote in person, that you put your ballot directly into a ballot counter. It is counted immediately. There is no other processing to be done. Our fear, and what some of my county colleagues have told me, is that they think they will not be able to finish by election night and will have to continue counting and processing on Wednesday. In 08, the Monday before Election Day was our busiest day, and we were just operating our St. Paul operation. We had over 1,200 people vote that one day. We had a longer line. And if you don't believe me, ask Senator Pappas or former Senator Anderson, because they were two of the people who voted in my office on Monday, and they can tell you why they weren't in town the next day. But in addition to all that, remember, we have mail coming in on Monday and on Tuesday. We have agents coming in from the nursing homes, in the hospitals on Monday and Tuesday. So there's a lot of activity going on. But it is really important to us, and again, I want to make sure that it's important to you as well, that at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, everything is processed and counted. So what we're looking for here is relief for one day, and that one day is the date of the presidential election next year.
But that one day is also the day before the election day.
Mr. Chairman, that is the point exactly. Now, I will tell you that in this the current amendment and in the current law, the absentee voting comes to an end at 3 o'clock on Saturday. We're certainly willing to stay open longer on Saturday if you are interested in doing that. If someone wants to make an amendment to do that, we are more than willing to stay open longer on Saturday. But in order for us to do the processing that we need to do on Monday, our preference is not to have the in-person voting on Monday.
Mr. Mansky, the purpose of the election system is to let people vote, and right up to election day is kind of my view. But Senator Roebling, did you...
Well, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering, since we have until next year to decide this particular issue, I guess I don't feel it has to be decided today, because we may find an alternative in the meantime that would allow people to vote on Monday. But right now, we would be taking away that option pretty much completely. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel very comfortable with doing that. So I guess I'd like to have some more time to figure out an alternative before we vote to just to strip it away.
Senator Sieben.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up that perhaps soon would be a good time to schedule my early voting bill then. Because this would essentially solve that issue. And I think, as we'll hear from county election folks, more and more people want to vote early. They're, coming up with reasons under the current law for why they can vote early, absentee. But if we would allow a period of early voting where you don't need to have an excuse as to why you're voting absentee instead of voting on Tuesday, then this would really solve that question too. So maybe it would be a good time one of these days to have that discussion in this committee about early voting.
Well, Senator Sieben will consider that. There are some concerns with that philosophy also, but we can have the discussion, I think. Senator, or Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to say that our office is...
Ouch.
Sorry. Not necessarily comfortable with doing away with voting on Monday. We are sensitive to the issues that the cities have raised, but also are concerned about voters who, after Saturday, find out that they're not going to be able to go to the polls. And would like to be in conversation with the cities about alternatives, but don't think that just prohibiting voting on Monday is necessarily the answer. So I don't know whether it makes sense to move the bill forward with this in there to continue discussions or take it out to continue discussions. That's up to you, of course, but we're not necessarily supportive the way it's currently written.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we should support the amendment to take that out and then continue to work with the cities and the counties and the league to find some kind of resolution, something that will help them with that task. I understand the horror scene if we ended up without all the ballots counted on election day or at, you know, 8 o'clock on election night. So, but I think we should take it out here and then that will make us work on it.
Senator Scheid, I agree, and we can stay open to some alternatives between now and the floor or even next year. So, further discussion?
Do you want me to read some things?
Ms. Dangle will restate the amendment.
The amendment is to remove both of what we have as Section 1 right now. Section 1 that came from the A1 amendment and Section 1 in the bill itself. So both of those Section 1s would be removed under this amendment.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted to the bill. Senator Chamberlain.
Just give a, in short, this bill is about, well, what we've been discussing. Election day voting processes, trying to make those more manageable and efficient for municipalities, local officials. With that, Ms. Higgins will run through the bill as quickly as possible. We have, I know we have other committees to go to.
Ms. Higgins.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is Ann Higgins again from the League of Cities. The other items that I not yet mentioned in the bill, Section 2, Section 3, allows a single combined polling place to be established at the discretion of the local level. That authority to do that right now is limited to cities that have it's 400 or fewer voters. We have had inquiries from a number of cities throughout the state to ask if they could exercise that discretion as well, given the fact that we have a lot of expansion in our population where there are not easily accessible polling places. We have lots of subdivisions and other kinds of circumstances. Even our urban centers are looking at ways that they can combine polling places, and we'd like to have the authority to do that at the local level. We'd still be looking at the same requirements for polling place accessibility and parking and the adequate space to run more than one polling place at the same place, but we currently are limited on as to which cities can do that. So that's one of the other provisions. A major provision that I'd like David Maeda to speak to is in section, let's see where it was here. Section 2 of the bill, and it's in regard to redistricting, which is happening for you right now, is beginning to get into the process, but it's also a matter of some urgency for cities, and particularly cities that have wards and have odd year elections. There are cities from Minnetonka, which is where David Baeta works as the city election official, all the way to Moorhead, to Duluth, Barnesville, all over the state, where there's an unusual circumstance, and we would like this to be addressed in the bill. So I'm just going to let him describe that part of the bill.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion? Mr. Linda? Maeda?
Mr. Chair, members, Section 2 addresses an issue
that... Just state your name for the tape.
I'm sorry, David Maeda, city clerk of Minnetonka. Mr. Chair and members, Section 2 addresses an issue that came from legislation that was passed in 2010 that inadvertently, we believe, affects a small group of cities in our redistricting. Cities with odd-year elections that elect their council members by wards are required by the 2010 law to redistrict the ward boundaries in 2011. We have to have this done by May 3rd of 2011. for Minnetonka, our schedule is basically I'm going to have our council look at the redistricting of the wards at its April 18th meeting and then take public input at that meeting, and then they have to have it adopted by their May 2nd meeting. So because we just got the census data last week, it gives us a very limited time for any public input, study, or really thoughtful council consideration of changing of their wards. There's also a concern that because the legislative and congressional redistricting for 2012 likely won't be done in time for us to have the information for our ward adjustments, that we'll have to readjust our wards to compensate for what the legislative boundary changes in the city are. So we'll be doing this process twice, basically, once this year and once again next year. The concern of this is basically for the voters. The worst case scenario is we'll adjust our ward boundaries and move impacted voters into a different ward. They'll vote at a new polling place in 2011 for our city elections than they did for the 2010 state elections, and then we might have a subset of voters that we readjust the ward, and then they'll be voting in a third polling place that's different from the previous 2 years. So that voters could be ending up in consecutive years voting in three different places. We think this would be very frustrating and confusing for voters. So we strongly urge passage of this bill, this section of the bill, anyways.
Senator Chamberlain.
Well, I'll let Mrs. Higgins finish the remaining sections.
The remaining sections are Section 6, which is, I think I mentioned before, about allowing one ballot board to accept and reject both mail ballots and absentee. Section 7, this is the original bill. I'm not speaking from all the amendments we've done. Allows an election judge to be closer to the vote tabulation equipment than 6 feet. Right now, it's been interpreted that the law restricts how close an election judge can come to the equipment. What we want to avoid and have difficulty doing is getting to the equipment soon enough to prevent jamming from being a major problem. There are lots of new voters, particularly in even year elections, and sometimes just even though it seems something that is easy enough to do, actually, sometimes people just make a slight movement and the machine can start to catch the ballots and reject them or not be able to count them, and they have to do it again and again. And rather than have that happen and have frustrated in that process, we'd like to have at least the discretion for the election judge to approach the machine when they see that there is some prospect that that's what kind of problems are beginning to occur. Section 9, and 8 and 9 of the original bill are county provisions that Mr. Mansky and the county election officials wanted to have put in the bill because they respond to the change in the state date of the state primary. It's to coordinate these two provisions of law to reflect that change in the date of the state primary. And I don't know if Mr. Mansky wants to speak any more detail about that.
Mr. Mansky.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just be very brief about this. If you want to actually consider those two sections, 9 and 8, backward, taking 9 first, that if the county boards this year go to their legal limit, their deadline for adopting a county commissioner plan will be May 1st. Under the current law, it would be too late for somebody to go to court and challenge it. And the problem here is that when the state primary date was changed last year, a couple of those dates that needed to be updated with it were missed. These are two of them. And so what we're proposing to do here is that you would have the county boards approving the commissioner plan. There would then be a requirement for them to file the plan with us, which is to make it available to the public. And then groups that were opposed to the commissioner plan could then go to court in a timely basis. And with the changes we're suggesting here, that you would be able to do just that.
With that, Mr. Chair, with that, that concludes the briefing of this bill.
Mr. Mansky, just one quick question. How is that Section 9, is that different from how they do those now?
Mr. Chairman, right at the moment, the only thing that is different is the timing. the timing is the sole issue here. We lost a month in this schedule because of the movement of the state primary backward. But the process would be exactly the same, and that is that the county board would adopt a plan. They would file the plan with us. It then becomes available for public inspection, and then members of the public have an opportunity to go into district court and challenge it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Chamberlain amends his motion that Senate File 919, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, folks.
Apparently, we are not meeting next week, so
they can't have a
forum. We'll see you all. We're adjourned.